Blog Talk Radio.
In the beginning was the beat, and the beat was the rhythm of God, and the rhythm of God is the harmony of humanity, and where there is harmony, there is peace.
Welcome to Dare to Win, family. Tonight's topic, strategies for survival. Are you prepared and have a healthy emotional state of mind to do what is necessary to survive? We'll be talking about these and other questions in tonight's program. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
But the rhythm plants the seeds of freedom. So we overcome with the rhythm, the drum beat. Will you give up your rhythm?
No. The rhythm in our heart is our freedom.
We ain't going to be.
The drum, calling our people to self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty. Good evening, family, and welcome to Dare to Win, the Us Lifting Us weekly radio program that airs every Thursday evening from 9 until 10 p.m. Dare to Win is the place where we have a sobering conversation about the economic plight of Black people and the imperative that we build the global economic machinery that will free us and once again put us on the path of making history. My name is Brother Kimbezi. I'm one of the board members of Us Lifting Us, and I'm excited tonight's program, Strategies for Survival. And we are joined by two of our board members, Brother Thurman, and I believe Sister Nanana is also on the line and will be making comments as well. Brother Thurman, how are you feeling this evening?
Good. I'm excited. I'm always excited about being in good company of African people.
And we're glad to have you on the air with us tonight. Family, to join the conversation, call 929-477-2789. Press the number 1 on your phone if you want to make a comment or ask a question. If you're listening via your computer, go to www.uslifting.us.com. That's uslifting.us.com. Click on the Ulu Radio tab, then click on Listen Live, and you can be a part of the conversation for this evening. Sister Nanana, can you hear me? And if you can, how are you feeling?
Yes, I can hear you, Brother Kambizi, and I'm hoping that you can hear me as well. And I'm feeling well this evening. Thank you so much for asking, and thank you for the opportunity to jointly participate this evening. I appreciate it.
Okay. With that said, then let's jump into this conversation, strategies for survival. Are we prepared, and do we have a healthy emotional state of mind to do what is necessary to survive? Brother Thurman, lead us in this conversation. Share your thoughts with us and how we need to be preparing for ourselves for a possibility that may be coming down the pipe.
Yes, and I would say on the subject of being prepared and having a healthy emotional state of mind to do what's necessary, there's large numbers of our people are not prepared because they have not taken a good look at this subject, and the subject is vast. And if you compare it to the people that are really, really staying on this subject, there's so many missing pieces, so much lack of clarity of what to do and to have a survival strategy. And the strategy is something that we need to be prepared for before whatever episode may happen. And so if we look at evidence of situations like Katrina in New Orleans and even Texas, I remember down in Texas when they had this humongous flood that was vast, and a sister actually got on her cell phone from a rooftop maybe. And I was amazed that I got, but it went out to a lot of people, but I got the message, even if it was a text. And she said that there were actually rescue boats with Europeans that bypassed her. And so right away, I knew then and I never forgot that had the community been together, we would have known of some sisters or brothers that actually had a boat. And they would have known where, you know, the people in the vicinity, you know, whether it was 10 miles away, lived. And so she was in a desperate situation, but yet she saw rescue boats go past. And so that's just another example of us as a group not being prepared. And even though I'm confident that in this nation and around the world that there are some that are certainly are prepared because a brother ancestor, I believe, Hannibal, a freak from Tennessee, somewhere down south, was teaching for years survival training, and I know some people that got training before he made his transition. And so, but in mass numbers, I say that we're not. What about you, Sister Nanana?
Well, thank you for the opportunity to comment, Brother Brother Thurman. I appreciate you including me, and I am definitely in agreement with you that as far as natural disasters are concerned and other types of horrific circumstances and situations that occur where large numbers of our community are affected, whether it's a wildfire or a river overflowing, that at this particular juncture, as a nation, as a group of people, we are not adequately prepared to take care of our own. And we know from past history that when we are in that circumstance and in that situation, just as the example that you gave of the sister who said that, you know, in the situation with Katrina, the rescue boats were going right past her, obviously seeing her standing or being there trying to get assistance, waiting for assistance, but they were headed towards people who looked like them, is basically what it was about. So, yes, we do need to be prepared for those types of natural disasters to have survival strategies. And I judge that we need to have survival strategies in other arenas as well. you know, just, and I'm sure you're going to address this, just a healthy emotional state of mind. And at some point later in our dialogue this evening, we'll be getting around to what survival strategies look like for our economic condition, because we must have survival strategies that we implement for a healthy economy as well. Thank you.
You know, I was thinking today, well, actually I've been thinking of it the last couple of days, ever since the president made that just terrible statement to the four women of color who are congresspersons, telling them to go back where they came from. Sister Nanana and Brother Thurman, many of us came up during the 60s and the 70s. It was not uncommon during then to hear those statements, you know, black folks need to go back where they came from. But what is interesting is how quickly things have shifted right back to that. In other words, those were statements that we heard 50 years ago. We haven't heard a lot about that over the last 3 or 4 decades, but now that number 45 feels comfortable making those kinds of statements, it's interesting how fast we seem to find ourselves right back in that climate. That coupled with the fact that, for example, New York City had a blackout a couple of days ago, a large swath of the city was without power for 5 hours. And Sister Nanana, you mentioned rivers overflowing and fires burning out of control. It seems that we've moved into an era where we have natural calamities. We also have a political climate that's extremely hostile towards people of color. And so now more than ever, this question of strategies for survival is not academic or hypothetical. This is real and it's right now. And we need to be talking about concrete steps. How do we protect ourselves in a climate where clearly our people are extremely vulnerable? So, Brother Thurman, begin to walk us through your thoughts. What must we do to prepare ourselves to survive in such a hostile environment?
Okay. And before that, I'd like to say the question is, what must we prepare for? And you mentioned disasters, and there's disasters, natural, but there's also created disasters. And then there's economic chaos. And economic chaos could, you know, just hop off at any time. And among the things that would happen with an economic shutdown, for example, is that the banks would shut down, and of course the ATM machines would shut down. And so if there were any stores, like grocery stores, that were still open, if you didn't have cash when the economic shutdown happened and you couldn't access the ATM machine, what would you do? For the people that are prepared, and a few years ago, there was a YouTube video, and some Europeans were talking about how they had food and water stored up for as much as 9 months and around the same amount of money for months. But when in some of the episodes like Katrina and some other situations and some of the storms, there was people that could not access the ATM machine. If they could get to it, it was shut down. And so that's just another. And then the disasters of the attacks, whatever, creates the situation of a food crisis. And so if the grocery stores close, I mean, what would the people be doing? Panicking. It also opens up the door for disease. And so just like they've held off for some time and it just came out maybe today, I guess in the national news that, but it's been going on for a few months, another outbreak of Ebola that have killed a few thousand or more people. And so that's just things we have to prepare for, and including the ongoing war, the war that's being waged on our people. See, we're in a state of emergency or war that's been declared on black folk long ago, and it have never stopped, and even though most of us don't realize it, because if we did, more of us would be paying attention to this subject of the strategies for survival. And there's more strategies than we can cover, but among the top ones would be unity. Because if we're not able to operate with each other in a unified fashion, and so we're more at risk when we're working alone. The power of the group amplifies, and the power of the group amplifies and extends the power of the individual. And so the group amplifies the power that the individual would not have. And if we don't know and forgotten how to just work in harmony with each other, we got a major problem. So among the essentials, it would include group loyalty. Loyalty. That means that if we got to ration food, that everybody's going to be loyal to about that. We've got to, and so in terms of emotional state of mind, we have to be, we need to be already know the subject about being calm, having courage, having discipline, but being calm, calmness. So the affirmation, one affirmation says, learn how not to be emotional about stuff. And so if the storm came and the river's rising or whatever, we're going to go forth with courage and with discipline, but we're not going to go for frantic, because if we go frantic, it's not going to work. We've got to maintain some calmness. So there's an epidemic that did not used to exist amongst our people, where more of our people, including our young people, including brothers, that are actually committing suicide because they're going frantic about all of this madness that's going on, and we need to be calm. And so we need to have gone through this subject of preparation that would involve us having the supplies, various supplies, like and already set aside in a tub and ideally in a backpack, some people call it a bug out bag, that would have clothing and shoes and basic essentials, and that would include things like an axe and some matches and LED flashlights and herbal first aid kit, radio, and some ability to make shelter, even if it was a tent, or either to know how to make some shelter. And so in a situation where we had to, be outside, and including out in the woods, we should not be in a situation like that as much as possible without some kind of weapons to back us up from whatever kind of danger we may be confronted with. And before I go any further, anyone else had any comments?
Well, I like that term, bug out bag. And what would you suggest goes in that bug out bag? Because and how soon should we put this bug out bag together, Brother Thurman?
It should have been last year, but as soon as you find out about it, if we didn't know about it tomorrow, you should be strategizing on the essentials that you need in an appropriate bag, and know how it fits on your back, and have it packed and ready so that at any day or night, if you had 5 minutes to get something to go with, that's what the first thing you're going to grab. And so you can't put everything in the house in it, but to have things like some extra socks, to have an axe, a knife, certainly a flashlight and a herbal first aid kit, things like that, and some means of some idea of what you would do under strenuous, difficult circumstances, what you would do to survive. But that bag needs to be packed already. And the
so
people that
if I'm hearing you correctly, make sure you have a plan. If you have to move in a hurry, have it already thought out what that would look like.
Yes.
Two, cash on hand, preferably wrapped in plastic and rubber bands so it wouldn't get wet and be useless. You say an axe, a hunting knife, herbal first aid kit. These are not just random suggestions, sisters and brothers. These are actually things that we need to be assembling if we have not already done so. Go ahead, Brother Thurman. I didn't mean to cut you off.
Yeah, and if you go online, YouTube, there are videos that actually show you people where they've actually laid everything out on the table that's going in their bag. And so you need to take a look at it and give thought to those kind of things and assemble those items and put them in your bag. And then every now and then, go back through your bag and review it again and to make sure that if you got, you know, LED flashlights that it's working, that you got some extra batteries. And when I say LED, because in comparison to those flashlights that were available long ago, they shine brighter, but not only that, they would last a long time. There's LED lights, you know, if you left it on all night long, it would still be on. So all of those things we got to think about. And it's so many pieces. We don't have enough time if we had 5 hours to go through all of the pieces. But we need, so the early preparation of already having that bug out bag or that backpack set up, we need to be well before the episode comes. And so we need to be thinking about our wellness all the time. And so if we're eating, if we're committing nutricide, which is the nutritional destruction of the black race, and eating pork chops and cheese, then a lot of us ain't well, and which will also mean we're not fit. So that means that if we had to grab our bag and meet up somewhere 25 miles away in 36 hours or whatever, there's a whole bunch of our people that could barely walk a half a mile or five blocks.
Mm-hmm.
But you and me going to survive and go forward, we would just have to take the bag and go with the family that's fit and ready. And we've got to be, and then we've got to have some concept of what we can use in nature. And in your bag, if you had some non-perishable foods dehydrated food, freeze-dried food that you could take with you, that would certainly help. And we need to study foraging, you know, which is to go out in nature and forage for food, you know. And there's lots of stuff out there, you know, like dandelions, you know, that they teach people to spray poison like Roundup on your lawn to kill it. But it's food. The root and the leaves are very nutritious. And wild lettuce and blackberries, people know about blackberries, and there's blueberries and other things out there that we can forage on and eat. And also, there's various nuts and seeds that can be sprouted. And if we had to leave, I would certainly be taking some of those nuts and seeds, and I'd have me a canvas sack, and something I'd known about for a long time, that if you had that canvas sack and you had some seeds, some sunflower seeds or some mung beans or something like that, alfalfa, you could stop at a creek, you know, when you stop to rest or stop overnight, and put it in the water and let it soak and then let it drain and put it back in your backpack and keep on walking. But 2 or 3 days later, it's going to be a substantial increase, you know, 5 or 10 times the volume of that original dried seed that would have sprouted some leaves. And when you expose it to some daylight, it would develop chlorophyll in the leaves. And so you had multiplied the nutritional content as well as the volume of that food while you're out in the woods and needed something to put it in, whether it's a canvas sack or if you're in the house, you know, a quart mason jar. And in 3 or 4 days, there would be a substantial increase in the volume. If it was a mason jar and you put a half an inch of sunflower seeds in it tonight and filled it up with water, tomorrow morning you rinse it and 2 or 3 times and let it drain and so it wouldn't be in the pools of water, and then you do the same thing tomorrow evening. But what would happen is that half an inch in 3 or 4 days would have filled the whole bottle up where those sunflower seeds had sprouted and it developed 2 leaves, and then you set that jar or the bag in and expose it not to direct sunlight but to some daylight. It would cause the daylight of the sun would cause those leaves to convert to chlorophyll, which is very similar to our blood but very nourishing to us. And that's just more. But we've got to be fit in mind, spirit, mind, and body. And then we got to take advantage of everything that nature offers us to stay nourished, including the sun. And so the sun has major benefits that helps to nourish us with vitamin D, but not just vitamin D. It helps our emotional well-being. It helps to heal us. It helps to keep us calm. And in a survival situation, you certainly need to be able to sleep well, but to be in the sun and to get into sun gazing, you know, it would help your sleep. It would help your mental clarity. It helps your energy, and it can heal you from a number of things. And and also,
okay, brother, let's take a break about right here. I don't see any callers, but just in the event for those that you have a question forming in your mind, call 929-477-2789. Press the number 1 on your keypad, and we'll open your line and receive your comment or your question. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back on the other side of the break, Brother Thurman, you continue to help us to think about and put together the things that we need in terms of strategies for survival. So, family, don't go anywhere. We'll be back in just a minute.
I was just a little girl, skinny legs and pressing curls. My mother always thought I'd be a star. Way before the record deal, streets that nurtured Lauryn Hill,
uh-huh.
Made sure that I never go too far. Every ghetto, every city, every suburban place I've been, make me recall my days in the New Jerusalem. Story starts in Hooterville. Grew up next to Ivy Hill when kids were stealing Carterville's fun. Killed a guy in Carter Park. Rode a mongoose till it's dark. Watching kids show off the stolen one. Every ghetto, every city, and suburban place I've been, made me recall my days in the New Jerusalem. You know it's hot, don't forget what you got. Looking back, looking back. Time 20 cents and a nickel. Spring till I have had the best popsicles. Saturday morning cartoons and kung fu. Main Street Roots Tonic with the dress. A beef patty and some cocoa bread. Move the patch from my leaves to the tongue of my shoe. Remember, Freeland Heisen used to have the bomb leather. Back when Doug Fresh and Slick Rick was together. Looking at the crew, we thought we'd all live forever.
And we're back, brothers and sisters. Of course, that was Lauryn Hill, Every Ghetto, Every City. Just reminding us of the neighborhoods that we've come from and the need to get back to being a village that can work together and struggle together and survive together. Brother Thurman, just before we went to break, you were telling us about things that we need to have assembled for a survival kit, but I think you were about to mention also other considerations that we should include in our strategies for survival. So pick us up from where you left off, and let's continue the conversation in terms of surviving in a hostile environment.
Yeah. Well, there's so many pieces. One of the things that we must do is the hostile environment. Outside is outside if it's in the city or if it's straight out in the woods, but it's still outside. And we must beforehand, reconnect with nature. And there again, we've got a major problem with our people that have disconnected from nature, and they try to stay out of nature, and they complain about nature. And every summer, every winter, they complain. It's hot, and they don't want to sweat, but we're supposed to sweat. We got sweat glands. So it's just like we got melanin. We're supposed to make use of it and value it instead of ignore it. And so the people, you know, widespread addicted to air conditioning. And African people are complaining about it's hot outside. And they didn't used to be like that because we didn't used to have that addiction to air conditioning, which is causing major problems for our people, like problems with dry eyes and headaches and sluggishness. But yet the information says this, those same people put them outside and let them stay out for a little while, and a lot of the problems that was the result of being in that air conditioning went away. But still, getting back to the air conditioning, when, if we have to, the power goes out, and we're going to be outside, be without that air conditioning. If we had never disconnected from nature, we could go outside and be outside. And so if it was 95 or 97 today, and I had to be, which I was content with it. And I mean, a lot of times I'll be outside and I'm smiling to myself and thinking about the people that wouldn't dare be out there if they could avoid it. But we've got to reconnect with nature. Our ancient ancestors, they were in harmony with nature. And so just on the subject of harmony, birds always have, and our ancestors knew it. Birds had a language, and their language, when those of us that still know it, they set off certain, in their language, alarms when predators or danger is coming. So that means that if we're in the deep woods or thick jungles or whatever, like Ivan Van Sertima grew up in, we would know what they're telling you is ahead. But we've missed those kind of things. And so to be out, if we go back to the land, which is something we must do, there's dangers in the wild, dangers, more dangers than there was 30 years ago. I know that, you know. I mean, there always have been dangers out there, animals and wild dog packs, but there's also more crazy people out there than they used to be. And we need to be prepared, and when we go out there, we need to be prepared to roll with the punches and have some backup devices with us. And I hope that adds some more, that it's a total package that we need to be prepared for the state of emergency that we're in, and that things could escalate even more difficult. They may, if they come in the morning, we need to be prepared.
Mm-hmm. You are certainly right. Sister Nanana, any thoughts triggered from Brother Thurman's comments?
Well, thank you for the opportunity, Brother Kimbizi, and certainly this is a subject that warrants all of our attention, and at some point warrants our actions. We all need to act on it and make sure that we are prepared for whatever abnormal events might occur. What comes up for me in terms of this subject, my thoughts are about the children. And as we are doing our preparation for survival, are we in fact teaching and training and helping the young children to understand what their role is, what they should or should not be doing during these times, and to a certain extent, helping them to understand some of the things that they can do to ensure their own survival? Because depending on what the circumstances are and what happens, you know, a child may not always be in the company of an adult. And so a big question that I would have and that I would want to follow through on is, what should I be training and teaching and saying to the young children to help them to understand and help them to acquire some skills so that they could, to a certain extent, at least be responsible for some of their survival. Not that I would want to set that up to happen that way, but in these types of circumstances, you never know what's going to happen. And so if there is no adult around, does this child have at least some basic ideas and some basic skills of at least where to go to find food, shelter, you know, how to take care of a wound, how to send out a flare that would indicate their location if they needed to ask for help. Just some basic things like that. So I think special attention needs to be paid to training and preparation and education of the children. So that would be what I would want to focus on. Thank you.
That's an important perspective, Sister Nanana. And again, that's the feminine principle expressing itself in our hearing, reminding us that not only must we prepare ourselves, at the same time, we certainly want to make sure that we have told the children and instructed them in a way that if they do get caught where they're not near or around supporting adults, they have some basic ideas and skills to help them survive and take care of themselves until they can reconnect with a family group or a larger group where there are knowledgeable adults around
mm-hmm.
to increase their protection. So that's
mm-hmm.
that's very important. Thank you, Sister Nanana. Brother Thurman, did you want to move into another segment of this Strategies for Survival?
Yes, another of the segments that's very important is we've got to recognize that we've got to go back to the land and having control of land and as a group. And we don't, you know, as we are making the transition towards going back to the land and having control of, lots of land has been lost to African people all over this world, but there's still lots of land that Africans do have. And a lot of them have land that's there. It's not in production. And a lot of times it's lost because when the elders pass on, transition, nobody's there because the people want to live this so-called modern life away from the land. But we've got to reconnect back to the land because it offers so many benefits. And it's just like today, Brother Kimbiza, you and I were talking. We've got most of us got somebody in the family, somebody we know that's got some land that's not in production, agriculture, or any other kind of manufacturing. That as a part of our survival strategy, whatever land that we could identify, and if it's group owned, that would be wonderful, like we need to strive to do. But if some family member owns it, and if they agree that in an emergency that we can regroup there, then that gives us an option that if the electricity goes off, the grocery stores close, and it's just mass chaos in these urban areas, that we could go to a safer place where the odds are greater of us being able to survive. So we need the land, but we also need to, as I said earlier, be back in touch with nature, which includes the land, and be back in touch with planting food, or growing food, harvesting food, and processing it in different ways. And part of that strategy that our elders and our ancestors were that they, all season, whatever the season was, they were always prepared to survive in terms of food in particular and other essentials because they stayed ahead of the season. So it's just like if, for example, in early September, and that was 3 or 4 feet of snow, those people that were on the land, it wouldn't put them in no vulnerable position, because they would still be able to keep warm, because even if they had some other source of heating, but they always had firewood put up. They always had food that had been dried, dehydrated, canned, smoked, whatever. But they would be ready. And so the land gives us that opportunity. The land gives us the opportunity to start growing food again and being in touch with that, and to be very content that we know what's in this food. We know what was put on it, or that it was not poisoned because we grew it. But when we don't, we're at the mercy of others. And when we don't grow our food, that means if the grocery store is shut, who do we go to for food? To their soup line? We should be taking care of our community. And also in the land, we've got to realize that we got to secure the land. And there's so much that we could do with the land. The cost of living can be dramatically reduced in terms of utility costs, and you've got the option of using solar and just a number of different techniques the technology provides to be able to have lighting in your house, to cool your house. Doesn't have to be air conditioning, because there's something called cool tubes that you dig a trench, you know, let's say 3 or 4 feet down in the ground. And but these tubes, you can use them in the summertime with a fan that will actually bring cool air that's somewhere around 60 or 57 degrees down in the ground, even in the summertime, that would cool your house without having to the expense and the maintenance involved with an air conditioning system, but just to keep your house and you from being overheated when it's 90 or 100 degrees. And all of those things, and wells, you know, when we had wells, then that meant that if it was a storm, if it was an ice storm, if things froze up in people's houses, their pipes froze up, the well, I never saw in my experience in the country that 20 feet down in the ground that the well was froze up. So they always had water, they had fuel, they had food. And all of that's part of the land. And there's so many other benefits that we could use, but as I said, the security, and we need to be there together. And then there's also help us to be in the mindset that we got land, we got to secure the land. And so we've got to be security conscious all the time, because we know what kind of people we have historically dealt with, and they have never stopped being the way they were from the first time they invaded us.
Hmm. You raise a very important topic for us, Brother Thurman, when you focus our attention on the importance of land. It was interesting that in some of our documents, we have advocated in Us Lifting Us that from an economic standpoint, that land is a gift to the people, and that we are here to be stewards of it, caretakers of it, but that the land was not intended for private ownership. And it seems that that private ownership of land has changed the relationships that people have to the land, and just as important, have changed the relationships that people have to each other, particularly when it comes to being able to put a fence up around a piece of property and say, this is my land.
Mm-hmm.
It was our experience much earlier as people on the continent that everyone had access to the land, had portions of the land or parcels of land that they could farm and, as you say, had in production, so that food was provided, water was provided, a space for shelter was provided, without this business of owning and selling the land. Or if we are going to own the land, then it's something that we need to think about owning the land as a collective, as a group, as a
yes.
family.
Yes.
This idea of private ownership of the land, real quiet as it's kept, is the basic structure of capitalism. so that land becomes capital, and tragically, African bodies became capital. And those two developments have put the planet on a trajectory. We are now living in the midst of that contradiction. Before we talk more specifically about utilizing land and us lifting us as a vehicle for getting our hands on land and using it in a different way, I just wanted to ask Sister Nanana if she had any thoughts about us being stewards of the land and how that changes our behavior towards each other.
Well, thank you for the opportunity to comment on that. And yes, I think that our behavior towards each other and just towards, you know, how we relate to the land would change tremendously if, in fact, we all understood the position that we are supposed to be in as caretakers and not as owners, that gives a whole different slant. For one thing, when you are a caretaker and not an owner, I judge that you have much, much more tendency and that you are much more open towards the whole concept of communal living, the whole concept of everything that is done for the benefit of the group, not for the benefit of any single individual or any single sets of individuals. You cannot help but develop that kind of a mindset. And so what I see happening and what grows out from that is that we start to really understand some of the basic building blocks of the whole cooperative concept in terms of pooling resources and in terms of doing things in such a way that the entire community benefits and that absolutely no one is left out. I think that returning to the land is absolutely essential, but we must return with the right mindset. And with a mindset that is around communal and cooperative values. That's the only way that I see that it could truly be successful. Otherwise, we are just duplicating the circumstances and the situations that we're in right now and promoting concepts that have never been beneficial to us and will never be beneficial for us going forward.
Brother Kim Beasy.
Brother Thurman, we're going to take a quick break. Thank you, Sister Nanana, for focusing our attention on the kinds of attitudes that we need to have, especially as it relates to the land. As soon as we come back from break, we're going to talk about the Ulu plan that enables us to acquire land, and then how do we organize our collective life on that land. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Thank you. And we're back. That's Garden of Peace by Lonnie Liston Smith, and it certainly puts us in a different frame of mind as we were thinking about land and its value for us as people living collectively. Brother Thurman, I apologize. I cut you off just before we went to break. Please go ahead with your comment.
Yeah, just a short comment. Among the necessities of survival, and when you're talking about land, when we put together, we've got the land and we decide to build housing, manufacturing centers, but certainly just talking about housing, we need to take advantage of the necessity to as much as possible to build housing that are tornado and hurricane proof. And that's something that most of us have not paid attention to, but it's been out there for years. And there are houses in various places across the country, you know, that 100-mile and 150-mile tornadoes and hurricanes have come through, and they might have had a broken shutter or something, and that was the extent of it in various designs, including dome houses and partially underground houses. But it's just wasted money, and it puts us in a vulnerable position to spend whether $75,000 or $200,000 or $300,000 on a house that a tornado can take and knock it down. But there are house designs, including earth berms and things like that, that the tornado would just roll right on gently all across it and with no problem.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that. And that certainly gives us one thing that we've learned as we go looking entirely at collective living and how do we as a people pool our resources. And then what do we use that towards? What do we build? It changes the entire thought process. Our goals change. Our desires change. Our attitudes change. And so let's, in the few moments that we have remaining, make sure that our listeners have a very clear understanding of how to become part of Us Lifting Us. And then once they become a part of Us Lifting Us, how do we pool our resources, the dollars in our wallets and in our purses, to begin to build the survival institutions and the other economic mechanisms that we need to function as a community and to be self-determining? Brother Thurman, how does a person become a member of Us Lifting Us?
Go to become a member. Go to the Us Lifting Us webpage, uslifting.us.com, and go to the. Make sure that you're on the home page, and you're on the home page. You scroll down, and on the right side there are three videos, and ideally we need to watch each one. But starting with the top video, which is an online presentation that will give you some greater clarity about Us Lifting Us, and at the end of the video, you would get opportunity to submit your information to Us Lifting Us. And if you don't find it there, that also at the top of the home page in the yellow bars, it says join and membership, and you click on that. And there you can fill out your information to apply for membership, and you have to apply, and you do have to be accepted. You cannot just join, you have to apply and be accepted, because there's qualifications that you must have to apply. And with that member application, then you're also sending in $50, which is the annual membership fee for Us Lifting Us, that once you become you're accepted and you are a member and your annual dues are paid, you are a voting member. All Us Lifting Us members have a vote, have a equal say so, and everybody only has one vote. Nobody ever will have more than one vote, more say so. And also you have the option, which is highly, highly desirable, is you would purchase an investment unit. An investment unit is $1,000, and that positions you to receive profits when Us Lifting Us is declaring profits, when we have businesses that are producing profits, and we'll start with one business, and the objective is to, because we have members somewhere in at least 550 members across the U.S. In probably seven African countries, African members in the Caribbean, South America, and that are working in various places in Europe. And so we're going to have multiple businesses all over the world. And once you are a member and you also have purchased an investment unit, then when we've got 10, 20, 100, 200 businesses across the planet and the numbers are growing, you would get to share in the profits of all of those businesses. And also you'd be a part of helping us to not just to have businesses and having profits, but to assure that these businesses will go into the future and have legacies that will go on into the future, where we would continue to circulate dollars with each other, support each other, and build more and more businesses and institutions and all of the things that we need to do, not just money, but institutions where, as Nanana was talking about, making sure that the babies know and everything that we talked about today, including having the land and on the land, you know, not just housing, but land where we can have manufacturing facilities on our own land where we are producing the goods that we need and goods that other people in the world need that we can sell to them. And
Thurman, we got a couple of callers. I'm going to try to see if we can get them in before our time runs out. The caller, last four digits are 8324. We're opening your line. If you're still with us, give us your name and where you're calling from. Last four numbers are 8324. Please tell us your name and where you're calling from. State your question or your comment.
Peace. This is Sister Q. I'm calling from Florida. I'm enjoying very much tonight's conversation. Well, I've been enjoying all of them that I listened to. This is the first time I'm participating. The question or the statement that I have is about the survival skills, bug out bag, and everything that Brother Thurman has been talking about. Is there a plan to have a seminar for ULU members, even as part of the next convention or at an ongoing workshop, monthly something or something, where we can actually see what he's talking about, what to put in the bug out bag, give us ideas, encouragement one to the other, so we know who each other are when we see each other and can grow and strengthen location to location, and then as if necessary, get ourselves to the situation.
Okay. Thank you for your question, Sister. Brother Thurman, can you give her a quick response?
Yeah, the quick response is that every member has a say-so. She's got a say-so. She brought up an excellent idea, and we can move forward on it because she brought it forward, and we're going to listen to what the sister said and do it.
Okay. One last question. One last caller. Last four numbers, 7742. Give us your name and where you're calling from. State your question or your comment, please.
Yeah, this is Yessie from Atlanta, Georgia. And
how you doing, brother?
Well, you know, I hope all the brothers out there are doing well. My comment had a lot to do with the business of the first business, Cafe ULU, and positioning a campaign to get investors to invest in properties that are Cafe ULU extensions and more extravagant Cafe ULU presentations, so that the investment in the land, though it can be used land-wise for growing, and that growing shouldn't be the old-fashioned growing. We should utilize the lands that we acquire to put together the premium high-tech formats of growing food that are healthy. But not to get off subject, right now...
Well, brother, you make a good point. Yeah. We're just about out of time. We're going to have to leave it there. But thank you for your comment, and we'll be taking that up as we go forward. Family, we thank you for tuning in. We'll be back next Thursday, 9 to 10, same time, same channel. We thank Brother Thurman and Sister Nanana for being with us tonight. We thank you for your presence. And join us next Thursday. We'll be talking about, once again, building the economic machinery for self-determination and